It began long ago, not on the battlefields of a great war, not just yet, but here, at the dawn of the universe itself, where there existed only the ether and the keepers, responsible for the physical manifestation of their realm, Agartha, they possessed an unimaginable power, and among them lived two beings, two faces of the same angel, and in time, they would come to be known as Dr. Monty and the Shadow Man. Within the forces of the Keepers resided allies of humankind, each of them being suited with significance in later facets of space and time, one of those men being named Pablo Marinus, and during the war, he would be saved by four unknown heroes, who would later themselves come to be known as Primus. Alongside Pablo, the Keepers, and the Wolf King, who would later be instructed by Primus to construct a castle named Der Eisendrache, Primus was able to defeat the Apothicons and end the war before seemingly disappearing from history. And so, it would be from here that the beginning, the true beginning, of the zombie storyline would really begin. Seven 700 years after the events of the Great War, we find ourselves in the year 1908, where there would be the first recorded incident of a mysterious meteorite landing called Element 115. It would land near the Tunguska River in Siberia. It would be a little while before this meteorite was rediscovered, and so it was, years later, a German scientist named Ludwig Maxis would be sent to investigate the crash. In the wake of his findings, he formed Group 935, a research organization focused on improving the human condition. After seeing the potential of Element 115 and the growing global conflict developing, Group 935 would expand their operations. 3 years later, on November 5th, Maxis would hire a fellow German scientist named Edward Richthofen. He would be brought on to Group 935 as a fellow head researcher, and on that very same day that Richthofen would be hired, Dr. Maxis's daughter would also be born. Her name was Samantha Maxis. During this time, other parts of the world were also beginning to experience crashes of Element 115. It would land in both a remote location in Japan and also in Groom Lake in Nevada. Their discoveries would spawn two other research groups from each nation, Division 9 and Broken Arrow, respectively. However, a large focus of conflict would reside within Germany and in Group 935. Together, Maxis and Richthofen would conduct tests with the unknown element and begin teleportation experiments with the newly constructed matter transference prototype. Results remained unsubstantial until one of the test subjects came back reanimated, vicious, and most shockingly, undead.
Stand up. Stand up! Good. Look at me. Over here. Good. Now walk forward. Excellent. Further. Keep coming. It's all right. Stay there. Calm down. I order you. Kill it! Bring me another.
Many months of testing and varying results led Maxis to ultimately reach out to the Reichstag, the German government, for more funding. However, in this time, Dr. Edward Richthofen would also be contacted by the Illuminati, and as such, would begin work with them in secret as well. Group 935 was going in a different direction, and they were leaning towards goals directed at addressing the growing global war. Richthofen fundamentally disagreed with this decision, as the original goals of the group were beginning to evaporate and becoming much more militarized. From what was once a group determined to improve humanity, changed into an effort to create an undead army and build wonder weaponry for the Führer and Nazi forces. Both Dr. Schuster and Dr. Porter were among the few researchers who were working on weaponry, and even though they had developed technology that was otherworldly, Richthofen began growing the seeds of distrust in both Group 935, but also specifically in Dr. Maxis. Instead, he would start focusing more on his own research. In fact, he would successfully teleport a walnut, only to be met with the belittlement from his once close ally in Maxis.
This is not the crucial experiment that you are supposed to be working on.
With all due respect, Dr. Maxis, this is a breakthrough of unimaginable proportions.
What? That you moved a walnut a few feet? Yes, Edward. We will improve the human condition by revolutionizing the walnut industry. I can see it now. Edward's walnut delivery.
Don't be obtuse.
How dare you call me that? We are at war, Edward. I will admit that there is promise here. But until this war is won...
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Maxis. But Group 935 is a research organization. What was the motto? To improve the human condition? What business of ours is this war?
Fine, Dr. Richthofen. I will let you in on a little administrative secret. We are finalizing a deal with the Nazi Party. We need funding. We need equipment. They need new weapons. Chances are this war will end soon with a treaty or two, and we will be in a much better position to help the world.
Are you certain this won't cause massive defections? We have scientists from all over the world working with us.
That is why it is with the utmost confidence that I share this with you. No one will know of this. This is simply the breaking of an egg to make an omelet.
Think of the tactical advantage we would have.
Think of the cost. Think of the time. We can provide the Nazis technical expertise in various areas without putting all our eggs in your walnut basket. Good day, Edward, and get back to your real work. Bloody jerk.
I think Dr. Maxis has lost his perspective. No matter. We'll do this on our own and publish the findings before he has a chance to.
You're not suggesting that Dr. Maxis would steal this technology and perfect it without us, are you?
I would by no means discourage that thought. Great scientists must stick together and achieve great science.
And now, working truly in secret from the group, Richthofen, with the assistance of only Dr. Schuster, would use the functioning teleporters at the Dury's facility to transfer himself willingly to the moon. There, he would encounter a mysterious pyramid device of alien origin, or more specifically, Apothicon origin. This unearthly device would be called the MPD by Edward Richthofen. However, something happened. Something very bad. While he was investigating the device, he would be shocked by it and then began to experience voices in his head. This opened a vessel that could be used to communicate from other dimensions. The Shadow Man would be one of those voices appearing before Edward Richthofen.
Please, you must help me. Only together can we prevent the destruction of your world.
You cannot conquer that which you do not understand.
And now, with a connection established between Edward Richthofen and the Shadow Man, who knows what the consequences of this would be? After his time spent on the moon, Richthofen would be teleported yet again to a temple of unknown location, a place in space and time known only as Shangri-La. There's some debate about where exactly this takes place, but nobody really knows for certain. However, he would find an artifact there of great importance in the Focusing Stone, and after a period of being worshipped and venerated by the natives of that temple, he was teleported back to Earth. The thing is, though, the Richthofen that came back, however, was a very changed man. one with a much more sinister scheme at hand, aiming to reach Agartha in order to harness its power. In the time following the return of Edward Richtofen, Group 935 would expand their operations to more locations around the world. An abandoned theater near Berlin, Germany, the Wittenau Sanatorium, a deserted mental hospital. Another would be in Siberia near the original Tunguska meteor. Another would be in Der Eisendrache, or the Eagle's Nest, which is closer to Austria. And finally, Griffin Station, all the way on the moon. And still, with all of this expansion of the operations in Group 935, they had all of the funding they could ever ask for, with the German government and the Reichstag funding them. The one thing 935 could never get enough of is test subjects. They would need live subjects, humans, that would be subjected to very dark and inhumane experiments in order to further and push their technology development. And honestly, what better way to capture a live test subject than the enemy soldiers of the war that you're currently fighting? A total of 3 live human subjects would be initially captured. One was a drunken Russian, defeated by both German forces and despair and the wounds of war. The other, a Japanese warrior, betrayed by his emperor. And finally, a Mexican spy who was caught hiding within enemy ranks. Together, these 3, Nikolai Belinsky, Takeo Masaki, and Pablo Marinus would become brainwashed into becoming Richtofen's minions on his quest to power, until an incident with Pablo's spleen required a last-minute replacement. However, in the meantime, an American soldier named Tank Dempsey, alongside John Banana, Smokey, and Gunner Ridge, would attempt to rescue Peter McCain, who had been captured. However, this plan was a disaster. All of the men were killed, except for Tank. He would be inevitably taken into custody by 935. Now, with Tank Dempsey as the 3rd and final lackey, Richtofen would be ready to enact his plan. The plan was simple. Richtofen would use the dog of his enemy's daughter as bait. After taking away Samantha's dog named Fluffy, he would put Fluffy into the device, running it, and then changing it forever. The damage done to Fluffy would be irreversible. Whatever it wasn't Fluffy anymore. It was something more akin to a hellhound. Samantha, having seen this, would run to her aid before Maxis intercepted the 2 to save his daughter. With them all now in the teleporter, Richtofen locked them in and sends them away, delivering it with the famous words, "Goodbye, Dr. Maxis." Richtofen's maniacal laughter would be heard echoing the halls of the Doris facility. The remaining scientists on hand, such as Dr. Porter, would take his own life at the burgeoning moments of the undead outbreak, and so it was that the Doris facility would be overrun with the monsters that they sought to control. It was not much different over at Griffin Station on the moon, where Samantha is chased by Richtofen's allies and indirectly into the MPD. Becoming drawn to the device, Samantha is teleported inside of it and soon thereafter corrupted by the dark ether. Dr. Groff is instructed by an irate Richtofen, learning of these developments, to teleport Maxis to the moon in hopes of coaxing his daughter out of the MPD. However, when he returns, he does so with the knowledge about merging with electricity from a realm known only to us as the Crazy Place.
Greetings, Dr. Maxis.
Schuster, I should have known. Where is that rat, Edvard? Where are we? And how did you get me out of that wretched...
None of that is important right now. Allow me to fill you in.
Samantha, honey, Daddy is here. Come, dear, please, open the machine. Daddy will not let them hurt you anymore. Honey, Daddy knows he's made some mistakes. I am truly sorry that you were put through so much.
When your mother died, I could not bear the thought of losing you, too. That's why I kept you so close. I did not mean to neglect you. I just wanted to know you were safe from harm. I love you, Samantha.
I love you too, Daddy.
Can you do something for me? Something very important.
Yes.
Kill them. We are doomed.
These were some of the final words to his daughter before taking his own life. In the wake of this catastrophe and the rage at her father's death, she beckons control over the ether and unleashes the undead onto the station, and as well as Richthofen at every turn moving forward. A few months prior to these events, an Allied plane would crash down, unleashing Element 115 on an airfield bunker in German-occupied Europe, leaving four lone Marines to fight till their last breath. This outbreak was not an aftereffect of Samantha's newfound power, but more so an accident due to Group 935. The bunker itself, however, had an unnerving aura around it, a much darker secret. Something wasn't right here, but it wouldn't be revisited for quite some time, and its true significance would not become relevant until much later. With a countdown timer now placed on Richthofen's head, with Samantha trying to destroy him at every moment, he had to make allies with an unlikely bunch, and in a weird twist of fate, he had no other choice but to work with the very subjects he sought to use for his own personal benefit. Thus, it would be known to us as Ultimus. This crew would embark on their quest to get to the MPD and confront Samantha Maxis. Their first stop on this quest was the Rising Sun facility in Japan. It was here at this facility, run by Division 9, the Japanese faction experimenting with Element 115, and even Takeo's former employer, where they would go to retrieve Richthofen's diary. With that crucial piece of the puzzle, they would return to the Dury's facility and use a teleporter in hopes of getting back to Samantha and using the diary's knowledge to weaken Samantha's hold on the ether. But unfortunately for Ultimus, something quite bad would happen. The use of the Wunderwaffe DG-2 would overload the teleporter and send Ultimus to an abandoned theater in Berlin, formerly run by Group 935. Before leaving here, they would encounter various versions of Samantha's bedroom, and thus her psyche, using the teleporters while they were there, and they would learn just how corrupt the dark ether had made her. It was a terrifying glimpse into her mind, and with the picture becoming more clear, their resolve was stronger than ever in that they needed to defeat Samantha Maxis. A still operational lunar lander that was found at the Berlin abandoned theater would be used by Ultimus, and they flew to a Russian cosmodrome where they would free the lone soul of a man part of the Ascension group, one Anton Gersh. This man, Anton Gersh, this lone soul of the Ascension group, the Russian version of 935, would be absolutely horrified of Samantha's influence and imprisonment of him in the ether, and so Ultimus agreed to help Anton Gersh, and restoring the use of his Kazmir mechanism eventually engulfed the crew and would shoot them further in time to the year 2011, to the location of the first ever Tunguska 115 meteor landing. However, this time, it was no longer a research facility commandeered by Group 935, but instead a film location, and when the Ultimus crew show up, a movie is actively being filmed by the director, George Romero. The film in question was a feature named Call of the Dead. However, due to Samantha's influence, the movie went from a pretend zombie set to a genuine, real, undead threat.
Get back to hair and makeup. You don't look dead enough.
Come on, let's go.
That ain't in the script.
I did research for a World War II movie. I came across some old Nazi documents. I couldn't believe what I was reading. Element 115, necromancers, raising the dead, real creepy stuff.
A couple of leagues around it. Come on!
The coolest thing? Some of that crazy shit happened right here.
Ultimus, however, stuck safely in a small room under the lighthouse. Primarily, Richtofen would communicate and would help guide the four remaining alive actors through this undead nightmare to retrieve a helpful artifact. This is probably a good time to explain that in zombies, there is a race living under the earth called the Vril'ya. They are essentially a hybrid of lizard and human-like creatures with very superior intellect, and it's implied through the technology provided to humanity by the Vril'ya is what allowed researchers like Group 935 or Division 9 to fully utilize and take advantage of Element 115, because without the Vril technology, 115 would be something that humanity could never contend with. So Richtofen knew this and sought to harness an artifact specifically made from the Vril. And Richtofen had his eyes set on something specific, an artifact called the Golden Rod. Being chased by the zombified director of their film, and now Sarah Michelle Gellar, Danny Trejo, Robert Englund, and Michael Rooker would find the rod. They would even power it, and they delivered it to Richtofen, sending Ultimus away to a remote temple. But something was wrong, because this wasn't the first time the crew had been here, or at least not Richtofen anyways. This was the very same temple, the Shangri-La, where he was once worshipped and venerated by the inhabitants. However, this time, they weren't alone. There were two more souls stuck here in an unending time loop and cycle. We don't really know how they managed to find their way into Shangri-La, but they were in a never-ending cycle of exploration and subsequent death. These expeditioners were named Brock and Gary. With Ultimus's help, they were actually freed from their never-ending hell, and in return, they helped Ultimus unlock access to the Focusing Stone, another Vril artifact. With all of the parts required for his plan, Ultimus would try to teleport to the moon once again, but the use of the 3179 JGB-215, or the baby gun, overloaded it once again and sent them through time and space back to the Pentagon in the 1960s. This is the second time that Dempsey would accidentally cause these interruptions in Richtofen's plan. It honestly kind of makes sense why he hates him so much now. In any case, after the crew teleported once again, they ended up in the Pentagon, which was experiencing its own outbreak at that moment. Ultimus used all of the machinery and assets that Broken Arrow had left over to build and directly establish a teleporter to Groom Lake, which would then give them access to the moon base. However, Samantha knew what was going on, and she had another trick up her sleeve. Through the power of her persuasion and being able to communicate directly with souls in the Dark Aether, she managed to convince a Yuri Javoisky, who was a previous Ascension Group member, to head to the Pentagon directly to stop Ultimus. But what she quickly realized was that she was too late, and Yuri Javoisky didn't get there in time, for Ultimus had already escaped and established a connection to the moon base. However, Yuri Javoisky's presence didn't go unnoticed, as a JFK, a Richard Dixon, Robert McNamara, and Fidel Castro would meet there the day after to discuss mutually assured destruction, leaving them to deal with Yuri himself and the undead outbreak. With all of the necessary parts gathered and at the precipice of Richtofen's goal, they teleport to Griffin Station and harness undead souls to open the MPD and reveal Samantha, thus weakening her grip with the ether. As more souls are gathered, Richtofen pulls the lever and finally enacts his grand scheme that he's been plotting all along, swapping souls with Samantha and giving himself control of the ether, one step closer to reaching Agartha. Richtofen intended on leaving her and the rest of Ultimus for dead, but Maxis, now merged with the electricity at the station, aimed to help them weaken Richtofen's link to Earth. And how did he do this, exactly? By what means did he achieve this? By literally crippling the Earth itself. Maxis would launch three separate rockets at Griffin Station, all towards Earth, making it its striking point, and with all of these rockets colliding, it would absolutely obliterate and cripple the Earth, and thus Richtofen's connection to the ether and the earth as well.
You fool! I should never have trusted you! Stop the madness, Edvard! We were supposed to help the human condition, not destroy it! I know what you are up to, and I will not allow you to succeed! I can. I certainly hope those calculations were correct. Well, that was a much larger explosion than I anticipated.
All of this pain, these tribulations and struggle that Takeo and Tank and Nikolai went through, only to get betrayed by their puppeteer in the end. Now stranded on the moon with no hopes of rescue, Richthofen had no intention of helping them out either. There's hardly a lonelier circumstance to be abandoned on the moon and the only home you've ever known now burned to rubble. The Earth is tough, and its survivors are no different. Meanwhile, over on Earth, in the remnants of a fractured Nuketown testing facility, both the CDC and the CIA are fighting off hordes of the undead, all the while witnessing the transfer of power between Richthofen and Samantha Maxis. These survivors battling on Earth would meet their grisly end at the hands of one of the three rockets sent to Earth by Maxis. Inside a bunker, however, underneath the facility, resided one Marlton Johnson, who survived with his intellect and sharp thinking to avoid the nuclear blasts, surviving yet another day in hopes of locating more survivors to improve his chances of survival. He would eventually gather the courage to leave the bunker and escape the facility, locating more survivors and trying to venture off on his own until he met three others on this now broken Earth. The first was a girl named Abigail Brierton, otherwise known as Misty. The second was a former Broken Arrow employee who has secrets of his own, and the only name we have for him is Russman. And the other, a neurotic older man named Samuel Stuhlinger. Now with Misty, Russman, and Stuhlinger by his side, the soon-to-be Victus crew would travel to Washington, D.C. based on the words of Stuhlinger's voice in his head. This voice, appearing before him and guiding Stuhlinger, would be none other than Edward Richthofen himself. Now, it's worth talking about why Stuhlinger is able to hear Richthofen. It's not just because he's a little bit more on the unhinged side. Just as Richthofen initially touching the device that became a vessel and allowed these voices, namely the Shadow Man, to appear to him in his head, similarly, eating any amounts of zombie flesh, which is very commonly what survivors on the Broken Earth would have to do for food, eating any kind of zombie flesh would thus establish a connection between that vessel and Richthofen, and so Samuel Stuhlinger was constantly at the whim of hearing Richthofen's voice in his head and whatever he wanted him to hear.
In this new world, we alone are your salvation. We alone can light the way. Hear our words. Heed our call. There is but one path to enlightenment. Just as they would consume us, we must consume them. We are the living, and we are the dead. We are the flesh.
It was at this Hanford site that they were also persuaded by both Richtofen and now Maxis, who is communicating through electricity. They traveled around the town using a broken-down bus piloted by an amusing yet crude robot named Ted. Along this quest, they would encounter an entity known only as Avogadro, who held an ominous resemblance to the Broken Arrow landmarks surrounding Victus. They ultimately activate the pylon there in Maxis's favor, and then are teleported by Richtofen to the destroyed skyscrapers in China, where they experience a vicious cycle of death, with Stuhlinger repeatedly being told to accept your fate and begin anew.
I don't understand. Why are you doing this? Why me? Travel where? Don't you get it? There's nothing left! How did you... What? What do you mean, mend the rift? Well, maybe I don't wanna. Huh? Did you think of that? Oh, you can't tell them about the flesh! What I did, they'd kill me if they knew. Ah, shit!
If you're gonna talk to your imaginary friend, Stu, you might want to wait till you're in a Z-free zone.
Stuhlinger! Get over here! Now!
All right, come on!
What do we do now?
We arm up, find a good place to defend, kick ass, that's it.
Don't understand.
What are you talking about, Stuhlinger? Misty made it pretty clear.
Except for me, begin.
We're going down. We're going down. Fight.
Have we been here before?
It is here that we find a little bit more about Stuhlinger's origins. Through an intercepted radio broadcast, we learn of a group called the Flesh, who eat zombie body parts, and thus all of them can hear voices in their head.
Attention all on this channel. This is George Barkley, former assistant director of the CDC facility in Druid Hills, Georgia. Prior to the destruction of our headquarters, our research found evidence that contaminants are now infecting the very air we breathe. As such, exposure of some sort appears inevitable for all survivors. Symptoms are variable, but most subjects display short-term memory loss, psychosis, delusion, and paranoia. Short-term memory loss has also been reported, but as of yet, I have been unable to confirm this. We advise all individuals to monitor their fellow survivors for signs of the above symptoms. Paranoia in particular. Ask yourself, are those closest to you really who you think they are? Are they following their own secret agenda? Are they perhaps plotting against you? The dangers presented by such symptoms cannot be overstated. I must be badness that I myself was forced to euthanize 14 members of my own team.
My condolences to your families.
I hope this message serves as a warning to all survivors. We must all do whatever it takes to ensure our future as a species. Thank you.
And we can only assume that Stuhlinger has this guidance as he was once a member of this group called the Flesh. Here, on this broken-down Chinese skyscraper, Victus is met with yet another choice, to activate the pylon in either Dr. Maxis or Richtofen's favor. Not really sure who to trust either way, as Richtofen is communicating directly with Stuhlinger, and Maxis is communicating with the rest of the crew via any kind of electrical signals he can manage. And so, it's a bit of a tough choice, but ultimately, they put the pylon in Maxis's favor. After this, Victus would go on a very long journey, traveling by foot, and they were guided by Richtofen to one final location, an Angolan mining site, which happened to house an old western town underneath, once known as Purgatory Point in the late 1800s. This western town contained the final pylon needed to help their benefactor access their power. Seeing a massive rift right here in the earth before them, they knew they were reaching an endpoint. Something had to give somewhere. And so after traveling down these mining shafts and ending up in the old abandoned town, Victus would meet a gentle giant named Arthur, who once served the Wolf King of Der Isendrake. After scattering his master's remains over the castle in the 1300s, he mysteriously got teleported to the old buried town, and to where this point now, he would help the crew on their journey. But Victus would uncover a number of more mysterious things while in this old western town, a large mansion inhabited and haunted by a ghost woman who sought to protect the pack-a-punch machine from anyone who drew near. For reasons not fully explained until later on in the story, it is recorded by a blacksmith, Jebediah Brown, in 1885, that he was told by two angels, Monty and the Shadow Man, to create a weapons upgrade machine using Element 115 from the mines under Purgatory Point. However, the exposure to Element 115 caused an infected member of the town to bite Jeb's mother in the throat, eventually killing her.
The first home he stumbled upon was me and Mary's. I was at the shop at the time. Ma went out to meet him and...
Clyde. Doc said it happened quick.
Clive jumped on her, ripped her throat. Old Bill ran over, put two through Clive's skull, shot him dead.
Like a dog.
But Ma, she's been laid to rest now. She'll rise up to heaven, and bless her soul, she'll be greeted with open arms. It was last night, when I slept, I had a vision. Two angels came down to me from heaven. They told me I needed to be ready to prepare for what was coming. And what was coming, they would not tell me, but how to prepare. Build a machine, they said. A machine that will grant you great power.
In mourning and using poor judgment, Jebediah places his mother's body in the pack-a-punch machine, only for her to return as a ghastly spirit, the same one that Victus fends off in 2025 here. This old western town, buried underneath Earth's crust, would have so many dark secrets of its own that would probably be left buried to the rest of history, and if it hadn't been for Victus to find and encounter this, most people would have never known about any of these things. But ultimately, the crew, not seeming to trust Richtofen's intentions and activating the pylon in favor of Maxis, in a turn of events, it would be Maxis himself that turned out to be the untrustworthy one of the two all along, as his prolonged exposure to the dark ether corrupted him. Despite his once righteous goals of removing Richtofen from power and the banishment of his soul into a zombie, Maxis would be the one to perish alongside that reality.
Have begun. Now I control the ether's energy. I can at last reach Agatha.
Ah, you fools! Why did you listen to him?
Regretfully, I must inform you that neither the Earth nor its people will survive.
Ah, I tried so hard to warn you. Don't go!
Once the gateway is open, I will finally be reunited with my dearest Samantha.
Hello? Are you forgetting something? Even if your wretched daughter is still alive, she has my body!
If you are so eager to re-enter the physical world, Richtofen, I will grant you that wish!
In the void left by its implosion, a rift would open for some still left within this dimension. One would be for Samantha, who would be transported to the moon to a house in Agartha. Another for Victus and the now zombified Richtofen, taking them to another reality, or more accurately, another dimension entirely.
My name is Samantha. I'm going to tell you how all this really began.
Hey.
In this new world that Samantha found herself in, she felt lost, abandoned, trapped, and with no means of accessing her powers outside of the ether, she communicated from a place called the house to the only person who she sought fit to help, her father. The version of him she called upon resided in a dimension ravaged by the battles of the First World War.
Began long ago on the battlefields of the Great War.
And so, it would be here that in northern France, an excavation was taking place, helped by two German scientists, a much younger Dr. Maxis and an Edward Richthofen, who sought to harvest dark and mysterious forces buried for centuries. Believing their discovery could help ensure the victory for Germany, they couldn't have imagined what their research would truly unearth. Ancient Templars from a century-old Great War rose back to life after exposure to Element 115 and wreaked havoc on the unsuspecting soldiers who inhabited the site. With the hordes ever increasing, Maxis would get caught in the crossfire, and it was left to his ally to save him by any means necessary. Being beckoned by their respective nations to uncover what happened at Excavation Site 64, younger versions of Tank Dempsey, Nikolai Belinsky, and Takeo Masaki intercepted an operation in its final stages. The young Richthofen had desperately tried to save his friend by removing his brain before the infection could set in. But before any more interrogation could take place, massive 1,000-foot-tall robots would stomp through the battlefield. Each one named after a Norse god, Freya, Odin, and Thor. Fighting their way through the dreary and muddy trenches of World War I, where it rained and snowed and they battled through the undead, they eventually made it to the mound, and at its base inside stood four lone statues, each resembling a member of the crew. The prophecy, in some odd way, came to pass, as Primus, the heroes from the Great War, had returned reincarnated, and among their shrines were pedestals for four elemental staffs. Now being instructed by the little lost girl, whose voice seemed to resemble Samantha Maxis, Primus was instructed to follow 8 specific steps, those being the same ones that Alex Mason would follow to escape Vorkuta 50 years later. In following her commands, Primus would acquire the copies of the ancient elemental staves that were developed by her father, Dr. Maxis. Richthofen, during this time, would also use the remnants and scraps left behind in the war to construct a drone vessel to house Maxis's brain so that he could communicate and become mobile again. With Maxis's help now, they would venture to a realm called the Crazy Place, the same place that the older Dr. Maxis learned to use and harness the power of electricity at. This time, however, it was used to open a portal to Agartha, where Primus would battle with blood, sweat, and tears to defend, so that the innocent being of Dr. Maxis could ascend to the realm above. This was freedom, something Richthofen had hoped for when he saved his friend from sure demise. With Maxis safely ascended and the portal now closed, Samantha would thank Primus for his safe passage, while also instructing them to enter through a portal to learn of their true calling, that being to save the innocent souls of themselves scattered among time and space and to deliver them to the house. As for Samantha, now adjusting to her new reality inside of Agartha, she was now accompanied by her father and another child named Eddie. Together, the children would play with figures that seemed to resemble Primus, Ultimus, and Victus. And before Eddie had a turn to play, Maxis instructed them to lock the windows and come down to the basement.
As the gates to Agartha opened, the four heroes were rewarded with riches beyond imagination. From that day forward, they knew that Samantha would keep them safe forever.
Getting everything wrong. I told you before that her eyes should be blue.
It's my turn, Eddie. I can do whatever I want.
But you don't even know how to play properly. Girls don't know enough about zombies.
What's the choice of my children? Make sure the windows are locked before you come down to the basement.
We'd better do what your dad says. I didn't even get my turn.
Tomorrow, Eddie, you get to make the rules. I promise. Come on, Fluffy.
I wish the heroes in our stories were real, Sam.
I know what you mean. But we will make everything okay. My dad says he has a plan.
Hey, Sal, we must have been through this 50 times already.
And we'll go through it another 50 if that's what it takes. 9:30, lights out. God begins his rounds. How we doing tonight, Ferguson? Family good?
Doing great, Mr. DeLuca. My boy Tommy, he's almost 6 now.
Ain't that swell?
Hey, Finn, get that tip for Saturday's race yet?
I'm working on it. Right now.
You gonna shut him up? Or do I gotta do it?
You know the rules, handsome. No talking.
9:35, the Weasel launches into his song and dance routine.
Damn it, Arlington.
You gotta get the doc.
Should be the real deal this time.
Once the Weasel gets the keys, we move on to stage 2.
Let's get moving.
Here you go, fellas. Courtesy of the warden's private collection.
Boys in the laundry stashed the pots?
Of course they fucking did.
What the fuck? I killed him.
You've been in the joint too long, Al. You've forgotten how to get shit done.
Sometime after the beginnings of this reality, in San Francisco, on the island of Alcatraz during the Prohibition era, four mobsters would find desolation and hell in the form of eternal purgatory. Believing to be punished for their wrongdoings and sins, the island had transformed into an undead hellscape where they would be tormented by the warden forevermore. After having killed Stanley Ferguson twice to initially escape, the inmates Sal DeLuca, Finn O'Leary, Billy Handsome, and Al Arlington would devise an escape plan to escape Alcatraz. But with the plan going sour, after escaping the rock, getting set off course, and flying onto the Golden Gate Bridge, a wrench thrown into their escape, they tried to devise a new one when suddenly electric chairs appeared in front of them on the bridge, foreshadowing their inevitable fate. They would use the chairs to bring them back to the island, repeating the process until the truth of what really happened was revealed, learning that they were in an eternal loop, paying for their sins in life and an escape plan gone murderous, with their souls being toyed with by a higher power, one that the warden himself served. They blamed the Weasel for their failure, but unbeknownst to the mobsters that he was following the will of the Shadow Man as a means of opening a gateway into the world. The Warden would let the rest of the cycle play out as necessary, and in an act of vengeance, a fight would break out on the bridge. Angry and hopeless, the three inmates would attempt to kill the Weasel, outnumbering him with pure firepower. He fought hard and mysteriously gained assistance from the undead during the struggle, but ultimately, it was not enough, and he would die by their hand, just as the prophecy had foretold. Now trapped in this endless cycle of violence with no means of escape, there seemed to be no hope or respite for this dimension, and it was now ripe for the Shadow Man's arrival. The Weasel was the key in all this, however. He was different, and he knew it.
Rejection hurts, but it's not the worst thing, is it, Albert? What really hurts is to be ignored. You know how that feels better than anyone, don't you? Sure, they want your skills, your expertise, but only on their terms. They don't care what else you have to offer, how different you could be, if only they noticed you. If they don't already suspect you, they will soon. And then what? What will you do when the truth's revealed? When your whole house of cards comes tumbling down? Will you confess? Or will you run? Where will you run, Albert? All around Mulberry Bush? There's nowhere to run. Nowhere to hide.
You'd have to show them, Al. You'd have to show them just what the weasel was really capable of.
You know, there's only one way this is gonna end, Al. Poor, poor weasel.
I said some things I shouldn't have said. But I was just angry. Upset. You know how close I am to this movie deal. I mean, they know about my dancing, but those pictures. You don't want to mess up my chance for stardom. Do you, baby? What do you say? You bring over those prints and we can make up.
The mayor's trying to make a name for himself, sticking his nose where it don't belong. He's looking into allegations of police bribery. What do you say we get together at the usual joint? Talk things through. Figure out a way to put this to bed before it gets out of hand. Trust me. Have I ever steered you wrong before?
I ain't fought in 18 months. I'm stepping at the last minute. I only got 2 weeks to train. But the outcome ain't in any doubt. See, I ain't leaving nothing to chance. He may be the number one contender, but his career ends tonight. You just make sure the ref knows to look the other way, because this ain't gonna be pretty. But once it's done, once you collect your debts and your bets, I get my shot at the title.
I do understand the seriousness of the situation. Why else would I be talking to my lawyer? But just to be clear, can you please tell me precisely how much debt my wife has accumulated? Do you happen to know if our life insurance policies are fully paid up? No. No. I can assure you, I'd never, ever think of taking such a course of action. No, I just want to make sure that our affairs are in order.
I have been watching. I have seen each and every one of your misdeeds. I know who you are.
But
questions remain. Why do you do the things you do? Do you not see the futility of your tiny, insignificant existence? You are but fragments of a bigger universe. Your sins serve only as an invitation to an evil beyond your imagination. I'll lead the way. I will show you the path. Only through me, the Shadow Man, will you find your redemption.
Finally escaped from the clutches of the Dark Aether, the Shadow Man entered the physical world and used disguises and trickery to slither his way into the center of the underworld. He was trying to obtain a valuable artifact from the Keepers called the Summoning Key. He was led here to a place called Morgue City. Here, he would play the same game as he had done before with the mobsters to gain what he wanted. He would contact the four under the name Mr. Wrapped. This was a disguise. This mysterious figure, Mr. Wrapped, would put pressure on the four to commit these terrible sins, setting them up for a need to seek out redemption.
As you can see, these
These documents give some indication as to the considerable amounts of money we are talking about.
My client would never have signed the authorization on these loans.
Nonetheless, there it is, in black and white, signed by the Mrs. herself.
Nero's family estate is not what it once was. Even if these documents are genuine, we'll need some time to get our affairs in order.
I would advise your client that our company intends to aggressively pursue settlement within 1 week. 15 days at the most.
Look, I need to make a call. My secretary will see you out.
Now, by the actions of his own hand as Mr. Rapt, he would weaponize the sins of a magician, Nero Blackstone, a burlesque dancer named Jessica Rose, a boxer named Floyd Campbell, and a corrupt cop named Jackie Vinson. He would also mark them with Apothicon language and provide them with the means to enter the Keeper Stronghold, telling them the Shadow Man himself would provide all the necessary incentive for them to seek out a means of redemption by obtaining the key for the Shadow Man. While gathering the gateworms and the key itself, they would have to fend off the keepers, who deemed them dangerous as they acted on the Shadow Man's orders. The protectors were ultimately thwarted off by the crew as they descended into their stronghold, and the cracked walls in the rail station would open and reveal an underworld. This entirely concealed stronghold of the Keeper race hidden just below the surface of Morgue City. In order to acquire the gateworms and thus gain access to the summoning key, it would require a blood sacrifice, someone that each of these four had wronged. Some were used for selfish means, others were wrongly killed. In the end, though, this would be the same sins that Mr. Rapt pressured them to commit. They would be forced to face the worst parts of their sins within themselves. The gateworms would allow them to access the Keeper Stronghold. On these walls lay the markings of a great battle, the great battle from eons past. This would be the same one where the Keepers and the Apothicons locked in vicious battle would fight to the death. After doing what he requested and handing off the key to the Shadow Man, he would finally reveal his true form to the crew and attempted to leave them for dead, as he had done many times before. Learning the truth about what really happened, the Keepers returned to aid the crew in their quest for revenge. The Shadow Man, thinking he had won, was just as quickly met with an army ready to launch a counterattack in the very sanctuary they helped him reach.
The forces of the apocalypse was the ancient order of the Keepers.
Why do you persist? Do you not see the futility of your efforts? Accept your fate and kneel before your new master.
I don't kneel for anyone.
Why do you insist on challenging me? What hope do you think you have?
Why do you continue to taunt us? Didn't you already get what you wanted?
Does the guilt haunt you? It should. You are the one responsible for everything that has transpired.
We were just patsies in your grand scheme.
You're going to be eating those words soon enough.
Nothing else? I can still shoot for vengeance.
My faith in my hand, not yours.
Your only purpose now is to suffer.
The fact you're still talking trash makes me think we got you one.
Let the games begin. You cannot conquer that which you do not understand.
I persist because I'm a persistent son of a bitch.
Your efforts are as insignificant as your very existence. Your world belongs to us.
Don't go thinking your fancy words confuse me. I know what all this means.
How could this be? This was not what was foretold in the prophecies. Wait! What are you doing? You are but mortals!
But in my heart, I know many more dimensions will be lost forever as we continue our journey towards peace. Forgive me.
After the Shadow Man would be defeated and locked away inside the summoning key, the Keepers entrusted the crew with the summoning key in hopes of its safe passage from the Dark Influence. But before they could hand it over, Richtofen, not seen in years and prepared for the journey ahead, would jump in and steal the key. And Richtofen, leaving just as quickly as he arrived, left that reality without a means of protection. This dimension would eventually succumb to Apothicon rule without the protective power of the summoning key and be wiped out from existence. But in order for Primus to continue their journey, they would have to go back to where it all truly started. Primus traveled back to the Duri's facility, where they planned to intercept a Richtofen, having just sent Samantha and Dr. Maxis away.
This ain't funny, Doc.
Turn around. Slowly.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, we know. That's why you'd better do exactly what we say.
A great evil approaches. There is a chain of events that must be set in motion.
Future hangs by a thread. You must awaken the test subjects.
Richtofen, whatever you're thinking of doing, don't do it!
You do not want to meet what's on the other side of that door.
You cannot begin to comprehend the great evil you could unleash.
Damn it, Richtofen! I thought we were done with this!
What can I say, Dick?
Things change.
Only a fool would dare to change history.
I am no fool. What I do only to secure a better tomorrow.
Yeah? Well, let's see if we live to see it.
Acting on orders to secure his soul, they would try to reason with him, but it was to no avail. He would brazenly open the teleporter door, surprised to be met with his Primus counterpart, who eliminates his other self without skipping a beat. Plans be damned now. Richtofen, disgusted by this future version of himself, explained that what he did to only secure a better tomorrow. Seemingly having gathered his soul in the chaos, Richtofen keeps the others on a need-to-know basis to chart their next course of action, which would be to acquire Dempsey's innocent soul.
This wasn't how it was supposed to go. You're supposed to secure the package and be in and out clean. Instead, the whole thing's been one disaster after another.
Eat my blade, beast!
Ah, fucking moon, maggot addicts! Today, you die!
street.
First I took your legs. Now I take your life.
I should never have trusted you, Richtofen. Never.
The place they would go to find Tank Dempsey's body would be at the Eagle's Nest once again, or Der Eisendrache, the same castle that Primus and the Keepers had constructed many years ago. Traveling to the base by gondola out of a small village in Austria, upon reaching the top and hoping to now disguise himself as the version of himself he had just prior killed, Richtofen would attempt to fool Dr. Groff into sending Dempsey back down from his shuttle en route to the moon. Using both time travel and the ethereal bows left at the site by the Wolf King and the Keepers that resided there, they would successfully bring him back down to Earth. However, they would be exposed as imposters because of this. Groff would activate a containment field over Dempsey's chamber to stop Primus from accessing him. Luckily enough, though, they were somehow able to teleport the MPD from Griffin Station down to the Eagle's Nest, and upon opening it, Primus would have to fight a massive keeper who had himself been corrupted by the Dark Aether. This intense battle, while not personal towards the keeper, it was necessary in doing the right thing. After defeating the Keeper, the MPD would help power the key so that they could overturn Dr. Groff once and for all. Appearing as a strange form of deja vu from Moon, the three rockets were this time sent from the Earth all the way up to the Moon, blowing it up and Dr. Groff alongside it. Taking advantage of the opportunity, Primus would walk towards Dempsey's pod when, out of nowhere, Richtofen used the key to halt the others.
This subject will one day wreak havoc across the entire universe. He cannot be allowed to leave.
This wasn't how it was supposed to go. We were supposed to secure the package and be in and out clean. Instead, the whole thing's been one disaster after another. I should never have trusted you, Richtofen. Never!
You should trust me, Dempsey. You all should. This artifact has the power to contain and preserve the subject's soul. Your soul. But it can only be done after the moment of death, just as you saw me do to my other self. It is the only way.
Wait! If someone's gotta take him out to save the universe, then it should be me that does it.
Good to see you, Tank.
Very understandable words from Dempsey in the heat of this betrayal, and in a weird way, it would resemble what happened to the other crew on the moon. However, it would be a bit different this time, as Richtofen would argue back that they could not simply save their vessels. They had to be killed, and they had to be the one to bear that burden alone. Dempsey, regrettably understanding the situation now, insisted that he be the one to do it. Now faced with himself, he would show his other self mercy by shutting off the machine and allowing his soul to be captured within the summoning key. In this moment, Primus would begin to bond and understand the stakes and the weight of their assignment, accepting their fates instead of fighting it and heading out now in search of the next Takio soul. Entering another new dimension, Primus would enter the Pacific Ocean in search of an island housing the next soul. In the dark waters, Division 9 would intercept and capture the crew onto their vessel and asking them, trying to ascertain the purpose of what the summoning key was for.
Take it easy, Tak.
I'm sorry. I don't speak Japanese.
誰か答えられないのか?
The object in your hand? It's gonna bring you nothing but pain. Believe me, I know.
ネズミどもを海に叩き落とせ!
I am an envoy of the Emperor himself. I am no traitor!
Oh, no!
That was close.
Yes! A little too close.
We must go, now!
They would eventually drift closer to the mainland and then swim to shore on the island. But it would be here, on the island itself, that Primus would discover something truly terrifying. The horrors here were as disturbing as the stench of death that they left, as experimentation with 115 on plant life and on humans created abominations unlike anything ever witnessed before, eventually reactivating an old elevator at the facility after battling through a massive mutated spider. Primus would plunge to the depths of Division 9's most foul secrets. And there would be a mutated horror waiting at the bottom for them, not even in control of itself. This monstrosity would be unrecognizable and beyond warped. However, after using Division 9's own biological weapons against it, it would be revealed to be Takeo himself, or the one of that dimension anyways.
Your eyes, I recognize them. Almost as though they were my own. Takeo Musaki, I did not believe I would find you in such a place. I was a warrior. I fought many great battles for the glory of our nation, for the honor of the dying samurai spirit. I was a hero. I share this memory. I have lived many of the same victories. I later learned that my victories were unwelcome. His betrayal was driven by petty jealousy. He knew I could endure anything, that I feared not even my own death. Punishment is one thing. This is cruelty. Who could be so evil as to desire another soul to endure such suffering? Who amongst us can be so dishonorable? Are you so blinded by your own loyalty? The orders came from the Emperor himself. My life. Upon a lie. This realm may have been corrupted and consumed by evil,
we possess the power to change things. Better tomorrow is only possible if we blow away the ashes of the past. None of us choose the means by which mercy will find us. But I am at peace. I understand what must be done. Will you be my Kaishakunin? It is my honor.
One to go. Guess it's you next, Nikolai.
Nine. There is something else we must know. There is a chain of events that must be set in motion.
A harsh reality for anyone to accept, and Takio, no less, having to take the brunt of this, made Primus bond with him even more. But before going after the final soul, Richtofen would make one extra stop. They would head to the lab under Alcatraz, the same one that he had built when he worked with the Illuminati, and this lab was safe, or almost safe. This is where they would acquire the blood vials from another version of Richtofen waiting for them. That Richtofen tells them that it's an insurance policy in case they don't like where they end up, and they have one more soul until everything is done. Three down, one to go. Traveling once again to yet another separate dimension, Primus travels out of an aurora borealis in the sky into a war-torn Stalingrad and uses an already dead Peter McCain to parachute safely down onto the land. Once arriving on the ground, they come into contact with Nikolai immediately, who is seen piloting a mech and is clearly very intoxicated. He instinctively shoots at Primus before getting picked up and tossed by a dragon into a collapsed building. Stuck in his disabled mech now and needing a new power core, he asks the crew for help to retrieve one of them and help him fight off the dragon. This reality became clear that it was truly broken beyond repair, as dragons and giant robots like the ones from Excavation Site 64 ravaged the landscape below. Clearly, something had been badly fractured in this reality, and it was corrupt beyond anything that could ever hope to be fixed. One interesting discovery would be made, though, in that Sophia, who would be Dr. Maxis's assistant and partner in the original dimension, would be found here, with her consciousness uploaded to the machine, cleverly named Sophia. The real Sophia would suffer a bite from a zombie, and Maxis would inevitably have to kill her, and in a similar way to how Richtofen saved Maxis by transferring his brain to a machine, Maxis would do the same for his love. Sophia would test Primus on trust and try to discern their true intentions, but after having a chance to reunite with Maxis and resolve the paradox, she would leave into the sky, leaving the power core for Primus to take over to Nikolai and repower his mech. And to hold up their end of the bargain, they would need to help Nikolai defeat the dragon. But of course, Primus isn't here for the dragon. They're here for Nikolai. Before fighting Nikolai, you have one more threat to take care of.
Today is Tokyo.
You could not kill me in castle. You could not kill me on island. You will not kill me here.
Only by your drunkenness, Nikolai.
Unfortunately, and I really am very sorry.
Your help is needed if we are to restore peace.
If you surrender.
Russian soldiers, they don't surrender!
This is not surrender, my Russian friend. This is a chance for redemption. His war, then his friend.
When victory is mine, I will bathe in your blood.
Look around you, Nikolai. This world is beyond saving.
Things are forgotten.
For a reason! You under a strange shackle, Soviet, with nothing to lose.
You're looking at the Nothing to Lose Club. All we got left is each other.
You are anything but underestimated. We all know what it is to lose.
Line yourself with enemies!
Turns out the dragon was nothing compared to an angry Russian man. In the end, though, Ultimus Nikolai would be the one to fall.
You think you will kill me now?
I am sorry, Nikolai. I wish there was another way. But know this. In my heart, I share the same pain as you. The pain that you have buried and blurred beneath an alcohol-fueled haze. Yes. The pain of your memory.
It's revealed that after defeating Mech Nikolai, he would tell us that the stories of his wives and all his adventures were largely false, and that he used drinking as a coping mechanism to mask the pain of loss and losing his one and only love. The two Nikolais compare how they handled their response to loss, and one of them used pain as a purpose to push him forward. The other used endless drinking and a morbid imagination to mask the pain.
For a reason!
It is done.
Swords! I've been collected, Maxis.
We will see you soon.
Now, with all of the pain said and done, the last soul would be collected and sent up to the house. Only witnessing three souls being sent up, Richtofen's being clearly absent, Dr. Monty would reach out to the other three, leaving Richtofen out of this conversation.
Nikolai, Dempsey, Takeo, I'm only talking to you right now. Richtofen, he can't hear me, so he's probably off doing his own thing right now anyway. No change there, I suppose. The good news is, you're nearly done. It'll soon be time to come to the house. But this plan, this big plan, a lot of it's been riding on Richtofen. Before he caught up with you guys, he spent years traveling, searching out just the right versions of you, the ones who held the key to closing off the other dimensions. I think you know by now exactly what that entails. Point is, he's kind of surplus to requirements these days. He's been in the house for ages, but don't tell him. Anyway, it all makes sense when you get here. You'll see. Honestly, it's going to be fine. Oh, shit. I completely forgot to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Monty.
Hello. So nice to see you all.
It would be revealed here that even though the innocent souls were upstairs in the house playing and under Dr. Monty's supervision, Maxis was still vulnerable. The Shadow Man, even from within the summoning key, would be able to communicate and influence Maxis as his vessel had a mind but no soul, making him very vulnerable to the influence of the Shadow Man, and he convinced Maxis to release him.
Okay, let's recap a bit, shall we? This was meant to be a new start, really. A perfect world. Free from all the evil that had corrupted each and every corner of the known and unknown universe. It was going to be a place of safety for the kids. The little yous. You little... Well, so far, so good. But things started to go wrong soon after you arrived. Now, I can understand your initial shock coming face to face with Maxis, especially after so long. But you did the right thing. You followed the plan. You brought the summoning key here, and you destroyed that bloody machine once and for all. Thing is, Maxis went and ballsed everything up.
Please, you must help me.
He heard voices, you see, calling to him.
Only together can we prevent the destruction of your world.
It wasn't really his fault. You know, he hasn't actually got his soul yet. All I got was a brain. Anyway, the key thing, as in the thing that is key, is that Maxis fiddled around with the summoning thingamajig and accidentally released an even bigger bastard. Someone even I didn't know was in there. The Shadow Man. The one and only original Harbinger of Doom. So, I'm going to be absolutely truthful with you. Things have got way too far out of control. This isn't any vague woo-hoo-woo-hoo evil. We're talking about the Apothicons, the most powerful and evil entities in all the existences that ever existed. And now they're here, in our perfect world.
And the Shadow Man would be thinking one step ahead, for he would not be only corrupting and persuading Dr. Maxis to release him from the summoning key, but he had plans to contact other people from other dimensions that we've previously visited. He would appear as Mr. Rapt once again before somebody who spoke to Stanley Ferguson, who witnessed the events of the Alcatraz escape, and we can hear their conversation.
Came out, and the weasel found himself. They did him good. left him bleeding to death on the cold stone roof. They all got the chair. Sad to think that three guys were dead, and swinging, all because they bought into the lies of a delusional comrade.
Anyway, no clue why Mr. Rapp wanted me to meet this Stanley first, but I'm headed to the city now. Something about tracking down three doozies and a floozy. Oh yeah, not to mention those artifacts in the South Pacific and Russia. I don't know what...
I never even met this guy.
Likes to stay to the shadows.
Real weirdo.
But the money's good.
Maybe it'll all make sense when I get there.
With the Shadow Man now being let loose in Agartha, he fractured the fabric of the realm itself, causing locations from our character's past to bleed into one another. This would have cascading effects on the entire dimensional fabric. With Dr. Monty hellbent on fixing his perfect world by any means necessary, he had Primus fend off the Apothicons and gather allies to send the Shadow Man away for good. But this would prove to be a much more difficult task than originally thought. With the very dimensional fabric in a fragile state and in danger, and the true intentions of Dr. Monty still a bit unknown, Tank, Nikolai, Takeo, and even Richtofen were preparing for the worst. This could very well be the end. For all they knew, this could be the last time that they would fight at each other's side. Soldiers who should have never been allies in the first place were now faced with the end together.
Darkness will find you now and forever.
Sometimes wish she had not been so forgiving. But to blame her would be so very wrong. I made my own mistakes.
Even though we are bound by destiny, in our hearts, we are a team.
We'll fight side by side, back to back. As for the last time, Nikolai.
All right. Let the game begin.
Midway, this way of life we're bound upon. I woke to find myself in a dark wood. Where the right rune was wholly lost and gone. I, me, how hard this may come.
Others may question my wisdom, but I know in my heart that I did what was right.
Are you so foolish and ignorant to believe that you are on the right side of destiny? This has always only ended once. I have foreseen it.
This is it. The ether. The infinite. It's the reality beyond. Beyond the world you know. Beyond your perception.
Sophia.
Yes, my love.
We will do it together, as one we are. Now and forever.
With the evil vanquished, I can start making it all nice again. No undead, no apothicons, no shadow man. All of it. Gone. Forever. But here's the funny thing. You snowflakes shouldn't even still be here. You should be fading out of existence by now. Those blood vials. I was wondering when you'd bring this up. They're from realities we've already closed off. They shouldn't be here. They can't be here. Such a paradox means you're putting my perfect world at risk. You guys and your bloody free will. What to do? What to do? Well, you certainly can't stay here. You could send us somewhere else. Somewhere we've never been. I suppose I could make a little corner somewhere in history. A place where I can dump some of the other shit that I've left over. Or I just wipe you from existence. Ooh, hang on. Actually, that all works out perfectly.
Monty sought out his perfect solution, which would be to send Primus back in time to the beginning of it all, the Great War, leaving them in a cycle of their own making for time and forever, infinitely trapped with no means of escaping. The cycle would continue forever and ever, until one day it wouldn't. It's been said that the only constant thing in life is change, and when things change, it can have ripple effects. That's why they always warn about time travel. In the instance of the cycle, however, it was the Weasel who was constantly murdered by the other three, but this time he came out victorious. No one really knows why the cycle broke, but after coming to maybe his own realizations about the truth within himself, he broke the cycle of death that he was constantly trapped in. With this one singular change, everything Monty had set in motion to keep his perfect universe whole disintegrated immediately. This would mean that Primus would take their journey from the Division 9 facility to the lab underneath Alcatraz, just as they had done so before. But the Richtofen that would meet them there would tell them they were late and to read the Chronorium as the pages have changed. Seemingly a little bit scatterbrained, he would head off, and leaving Primus now a bit confused as their previously set insurance policy would no longer be required.
Was stumbling around in total darkness part of plan?
You give us the fire, we'll give them hell.
Do not speak so lightly of hell.
Easy, Tech. I didn't mean the real thing.
Gentlemen, we are here.
Where are you, Davis?
They should be closer to the lab. No matter. This way, if you please. You're late.
Doctor.
Doctor? Is there a problem?
Two for each. Survival depends on it.
Ah, yeah, yeah. You remember?
So much to do.
The vessel for Max
passages, the opening of the gateways. Are you sure you're not getting confused? You'll be needing this. The Cronorium. But I've already read it. Read it again. What is the meaning of this? The pages have changed. They, our blood, my blood. You cannot possibly expect me to let this happen. You son of a bitch!
Let me guess. You're not going to let us in on what that was about.
Or explain why you have people in freezer.
We are leaving. So,
da конечно.
Asshole.
There! Get to the portal! Now!
I will be reborn!
My God, what have I done?
The warden mentioning that he would be reborn again certainly lived up to his promise. He used every fiber in his being and the power that he received from communing with the Shadow Man to stop Primus from leaving it all and shutting down the only portal as a means of escape. He was instructed by the Shadow Man to entrap the four mobsters in Purgatory so that one day they could capture Primus in the same hellscape. In arriving at and exploring the warden's house, they find his secret lair where his original corpse resided. The full extent of his communion with the Shadow Man would start to be made much more clear.
It will be glorious in this new realm, Lord. I have no doubt. But I confess, I am afraid. This form is weak and has taken to drink. But I do cling to it still. Please, grant me the strength to...
Grant you the strength? Oh, you poor, pathetic wretch. I will grant you nothing until your death. You know this.
Yes, yes, my lord, of course. My life is part of the disease, and the disease must be purged. I rejoice that day has come.
But you are a base, disgusting creature that cannot help fearing for its own skin. It is not your fault.
Oh, thank you for saying so, my lord. Truth be told, I long for the miracle that will release me.
That's a good lad. You have been an adequate servant. Therefore, you will continue to serve after the corruption. Your life's sentence, waiting for Dr. Edward Richthofen to walk into the trap.
The doctor... I've heard mention of him amongst the Illuminati. What would you have of him?
His blood holds great power. You will harness it all and open the way to the paradise below.
I swear, my lord, it will be done.
And one more thing.
Name it, my lord.
Spare him no pain.
Yes. Richthofen shall suffer.
Primus awakened the spirits of the island who would test their patience and character, and as if a mirror being held up directly to each and every single one of them, the island and the spirits reflected the 8 stages of grief onto our characters. But before being able to escape after dealing with these trials, the warden would have another card to play.
Impossible! What?
You belong to me!
My brain trying to escape my skull! Escape? Nine, is it true?
It would appear that the warden was successful in his plan to capture Richtofen.
You think that this is your prison? That you can repay your debt to existence? This is not a matter of debts. No debts you certainly owe. This is my life sentence. The reason I was born, and the destiny for which I have bled and tortured and killed and died again and again. It is Armageddon.
This flaming garbage heap is your magnum opus. I applaud your dedication, Herr Warden, but your Armageddon is locked in here with you.
Until you brought me the key, I can hear it pounding through your veins. Faster and faster! Your life sentence begins. You will suffer. You will not die. Your heart will beat as everlasting engines in my machine, holding the gateway open so that they will finally leave. Now rest yourselves. Soon. Lights out!
The warden had truly succeeded, and this would be Primus's eternity, had it not been for the one who broke the cycle himself and returned in the spirit of a bird.
Guten Tag, little bird. You can have all the cronoriums you want when we get back to the lab.
This bird, the spirit that was responsible for stealing the cronorium from us just moments ago, was the very weasel that would be responsible for breaking the cycle, who would also find his redemption with the other spirits. And the weasel, being the true key to all of this, came to the prison and released Primus from their shackles, the eternity that they would have served had it not been for the one who broke that cycle in the first place. And so it was that Primus was given another chance at life, another shot at redemption. Being alerted to the second escape attempt from Primus, that would be the warden's last straw. Insolence that could not be tolerated caused him to fully embrace the Shadow Man's power.
The Phoenix!
giving up any last shreds of humanity to embrace the monster. But before he could retaliate, though, the ghosts of the four mobsters from Alcatraz, the very ones sentenced to eternal damnation, found their own redemption by holding off the warden just long enough for Primus to escape back into the lab and initiate a thawing sequence for the cryo chambers. Before them would be a device called the Dark Mechanism, and this machine would require a sacrifice for a portal to be opened. However, the cycle that previously followed a predetermined path was broken, and the warden embraced the darkness, the Apothicon corruption, fully to stop Primus and keep them there for eternity. Richtofen would do something incredibly selfless. He would put himself in the Dark Mechanism as bait, so that he could turn the tides of the battle into the favor of his allies. But unbeknownst to him, this could mean the ultimate sacrifice, and with the cycle broken, a permanent sacrifice. And so, not to disobey his master, as one last resort, the warden would summon every spirit to capture Primus.
Let him have it, boys! Every last round! You're out of nowhere, now hide behind smoke? This is no man to fear.
Listen to how the spirits sing. They are free of this realm.
Ain't that swell? Does that mean we win?
I would be greatly relieved if that were so. I am in no hurry to ensnare my mortal soul.
That will not be necessary, Nikolai. The future has changed.
The Cronorium?
Read it. Learn of your true calling. You must keep your soul. It will be needed to defeat Dr. Monty.
Who?
Hello? Hello? I am still here.
Oh God. What have I done?
I honestly thought you were going to let me be today. It was so sad.
The cycle is broken, Herr Doctor. As such,
insurance policies are no longer needed. I wish I could tell you I was sorry, Edward. But I'm not.
No. No, you can help me. You're a doctor. I have been witness to miracles and calamities. Dimensions born and collapse. I walk a path no other can take. No! I want to be me. Someone who can also hard work! I want to keep going. This is me. My sight is hard. You won't even remember.
Just as the Cronorium had changed, so has Richthofen, no longer being the selfish, self-centered mad scientist he once was. He was concerned for his allies, or dare even say, his friends. But why didn't they save him? Why were they so quick to abandon Richthofen? Well, it's because he never actually collected his soul, and thus, they never actually bonded with the shared pain that they all experienced. With Nikolai now in charge of their destinies, he takes this crew to the Pentagon once again, where it is revealed that this version of Ultimus from after the events of Moon all those years ago survived and got sent here to live in isolation. They were all intact except for Richthofen, who remained soulless and lifeless after Samantha's soul was ripped all the way out with the ending of the original Ultimus timeline.
Not understand. Yeah. You saw it destroyed, yet here we are.
It's more time travel bullshit, Tech. Just hasn't happened yet. Speaking of BS. How the hell did you get back in your body, Doc?
Does it matter, Dempsey?
I'll tell you what matters. Americans still give Nikolai his vodka. Is that your plan, Nikolai? To give up and drink yourself to oblivion? Or do you want to make a difference for once in your life?
You. Oh, scheiße.
You four must come with us. In time, it will make sense. But now...
Intruders on the base. Hangar full.
Now we must go. Quickly. There is a war to be fought.
War? What kind of war?
A war unlike any you have ever seen. The Great.
He would come back to life, somehow, as he always did, but when the zombified Richthofen from the same timeline walked into the original body, the Richthofen that had just come back from chasing Victus on their way to obtaining the Cronorium and a piece of an artifact called the Elemental Shard, before finally guiding them to Alcatraz for cryostasis. Now, the Ultimus version, more maniacal than ever, alongside the compatriots he left for dead, would get freed by Primus and asked them to help fight the new Great War. A new Cronorium required new artifacts to be gathered, and in an attempt to rewrite their destinies, the first two parts of this would be the Elemental Shard. To find that, they would have to travel to a Nuketown bunker in a new reality, one where the base was controlled by Broken Arrow, the former employers of Russman. Having to restore the power was quite a chore for the 8-person crew on a race against the clock, but the artificial intelligence of the base, Rushmore, made things even harder.
How did you have a dream, Brick? And where are Purnell and his staff?
With this dimension taking place in 2025, Rushmore's fear of missing over 50 years of events, including the unknown whereabouts of the chief, Cornelius Purnell, it blocked off all access to the shard. Throughout their tests, radios can be found all around the site echoing urgent transmissions from a very worried Dr. Maxis, insisting that he hear back from Richtofen immediately. He states how Monty suspects the crew of trying to plot something against him, and says that all of this unnatural overreaction could be part of something more. As more transmissions come in, Maxis begins to decipher the true intentions of Monty and what they can all do to stop the cycle, destroying Element 115, or more accurately, ridding it from ever interacting with humanity would solve the paradox. But Monty chooses not to. He elaborates, saying that Monty will never do so, as it would destroy the Aether, and subsequently Agartha, and even Monty himself. While it would completely reset the universe, it would never happen as long as Monty has a say in it. Having gained this knowledge, they progressed to the final stages in their operation, with one being to acquire and set free the soul of Dempsey's old friend, who he had failed to save all those years ago in the sanatorium, Peter McCain. Vouching for Primus and Ultimus, Rushmore gives them access to the APD, the American Pyramid Device, a carbon copy of the one on the moon, and in going to open it, they are met with an immense surge of electricity, an electric entity, now a monster, who formerly went by Director Cornelius Purnell, but due to prolonged exposure to Element 115 and the Elemental Shard, transformed into the Avogadro. Like all before him, he wanted power over the ether to reach Agartha and had the site nuked to stop any means of escape. The crew would defeat the Avogadro, they would push him back into the APD, and with the assistance of Rushmore, they would send him back to where he belonged, the Hanford site in Washington. Being finally united with the Elemental Shard for a job well done, the crew head outside only to be interrupted by a chilling final radio from Dr. Maxis.
Happy, Nikolai? Everything playing out as the Chronorium predicted.
We have what we came for. The Elemental Shard. Hooray for us!
It's too late!
Maxis.
He knows what you're doing.
Who knows? Who does he speak of?
Dr. Monty.
What's happening, Nikolai?
You are too late.
That's all we fucking need.
Hello, Samantha.
Who is the boy?
That would be us.
We're going to fight the war, Eddie. The great war. Then, we're going back to the house to kill him and burn it all to the ground. Agartha, the Aether, the Infinite. Everything.
What? Are you serious?
No way. Dude, that's awesome!
Stu?
Oh, my. Someone's been busy.
Your joinman pal asked if we wanted to live. This don't feel like living.
Calm down, everybody. Everything's fine.
Or going to be fine. Okay?
My friends, old and new, we stand on the brink of victory. Element 115, Group 935, the Hellpig Scourge, the MPD, the Apothecons, all of it will soon be gone. But tonight, tonight, we celebrate.
We got a whole bunch of maggot feeders headed downstairs. And we ain't got no weapons.
Yes. I'm telling them now, but they're all a teensy bit grumpy because they just woke up.
Hey, Stu. You want to be a bit more specific about what the voice in your head is actually saying?
Dr. Minty? What? Is he like a bad guy?
We gotta go. With this power and the means to control it, we can go wherever we choose. At last, we can return to our homes, our old lives, our families.
I've got to be honest with you, Samuel. I don't have even the slightest inkling as to what an Agarthan device is.
You didn't say you had to know what it was, Martin. Just how to build it.
Trust me, guys. It won't be that complicated. In fact, my German pal says it's going to be a schlock duke.
It's one thing trusting you, Stu. It's a whole other thing trusting your imaginary brain buddy.
Rossman, how can you even say that? He's the sweetest guy in the whole universe. He wants us to help save it! The universe!
Thank you, Sammy. I'm moved.
The madness is nearly over, child. But one thing remains. The one who perpetuates this madness. He must be... I wish I did not have to ask this of you, but... only you can do it.
Something that only Samantha can do, but... what would that be? In any case, we find ourselves looking back to what Victus is up to. They go through a portal sending them back to one final, familiar location, the Tunguska site, the same one where Call of the Dead was filmed, however, this time taking place in the 1940s. Victus fights their way towards the lighthouse where a hermit resides atop. this somewhat strange and mysterious hermit would ask Victus to help him with small labors and little things, but in doing so, he would confide in them much knowledge and visions of the Great War and the enemy within, and provide clarity on what they need to do next. Underneath the ship, a giant glowing red orb sits, with frozen corpses sprawled around. Using the dials given to them from the hermit, they are able to communicate with it, revealing itself as Apothicon Blood, which in and of itself is sentient. It requires souls to allow for its possession of its power. As they cultivate the Apothicon Blood each time, they're able to listen to what Permis and Ultimus are up to in that moment. Nikolai goes around asking each and every person what they truly want out of their life. Somber and almost conclusive in its nature, the conversations persist before they finally all fall asleep, with thoughts of the Great War being concluded the following day.
So, got these Boy Scouts to run around frantically trying to construct some Agarthan device. I get it, but what is it? What does it do?
The Agarthan device can do many things. It has the power to open and close new worlds.
New worlds? Ain't we open enough new worlds? Isn't that why we're in this mess in the first place?
As I said, it has the power to do many things. For us, I intend to use it to bring us the peace that has eluded us for so long.
Cheers to that, but we'll see.
Who deems the Drovia?
I need a refit.
Retrieving the final messages from the campsite now, Nikolai remains awake for Victus, as does zombified Ultimus Richthofen, and tells them that they must retrieve the elemental shard locked within the same door that Ultimus was in during 2011. With the encouragement from Pablo and Nikolai at the ready for what was next, they merged the shard and the Agarthan device. This would change the landscape, and Victus would have one last real shot at not only survival, which they have been desperately fighting for since the day the rocket struck the Earth. That's the only mode of being that they've ever known, is mere survival. But beyond just survival, they have a chance at real redemption for the world and, more importantly, for themselves.
Uh-oh. I think I just pissed off the universe.
I know what is happening.
Don't die, Misty. I wouldn't want to go a hot without you.
The man's tired of getting hit. Tired of bleeding.
Samuel J. Stellinger is going to crack the thunder and break the beast.
You made me fall again.
I'll need some help. But in my visions, I have seen that I will have help soon. For now, I must bide my time. You are closer and closer to ending this conflict, my friends. Do not stop.
Do you hear the sounds of conflict? He is going to war.
I wish the heroes in our stories were real, Sam.
I know what you mean. But we will make everything okay. My dad says he has a plan.
The silence that followed was deafening. All of the undead have finally disappeared, this time for good, allowing Victus to hand over the device to their only remaining ally, the Hermit. he revealed himself to be Pablo Marinus, the other human who was a reincarnate of the Great War. He sets out to fulfill his purpose there and gives back the device to Victus to teleport back to Nikolai for his final act. They are thanked for their service, but it's silence after that. Why? Because in the forest, things were far from okay.
Comrades, as we toast our victory, I want each of you to think about what you really want. Where would you like to go now? Believe me, you can have it.
Rick Toppin? Has something gone wrong? We did everything you asked! You haven't forgotten about us, have you?
No, Sammy. I haven't forgotten about you.
It is time, Rick Toppin. The multiverse must come to an end. The paradox must be resolved. At least, it will be quick.
What are you talking about? We found the Agardian device!
I know. And I'm so sorry.
Me too, Richtofen. We fought for what we wanted. We got more than we deserved. All the chapters of our lives, good and bad. Even if there was no witness, even if no one cared to see, it still happened somewhere. We fought the Great War over and over, but victory could never be ours. We were always doomed to fail. Monty told us the truth. Our journey is the very reason this madness exists. We are the ones who fractured the universe. This is the truth the Chronorium showed me. The truth Richtofen could no longer face. When we are gone, so too is everything that spewed forth from the ether. Element 115, the Apocalypse, even Monty himself. All of it will be banished to where it belongs. The Dark Aether. We should not be here. Our time. Past. But for all the pain and torment we have endured together, as we leave this life behind, it is my hope that you know one thing beyond any doubt.
look away, Eddie.
You are more than just my allies, my brothers in arms. You were my friends. To return to my home, my beloved, before the bombs fell, if only to die by your side.
I see myself at peace, free, sitting beneath a cherry blossom tree, listening to the joy of my children.
I think I'd like to teach medicine, maybe pathology.
You know, the more I think about it, the more I think I'd be a darn good DI.
I would like to be in favorite bar.
As long as I have vodka,
I am a happy man.
I would like to know for sure that I got honor to my ancestors.
I should probably try to relax.
Think of a hobby.
Let me think about it. Wherever I go, you know I'll be kicking ass.
Don't be surprised if some things don't want to stay dead. In a seemingly separate universe, away from everything involving the ether, a journey involving magic, artifacts, and mythology took place, beginning with the expeditions of an archaeologist and demonologist named Alistair Rhodes, who is in search of mystical relics and a powerful element called Prima Materia, said to possess the means to unite all things with immense power in alchemy. Alistair Rhodes, on his adventures around the world, would meet three different people and eventually make them his allies in search of his power, Diego Nicali, Stanton Shaw, and Bruno Delacroix. In one expedition, Bruno would be fatally shot, but the usage of the ancient Staff of Ra infused light and brought him back to life. Rhodes' dealings with the occult led to his own capture under the nose of his closest compatriot, his butler, Godfrey. Under the influence of this order, without his own knowledge, Godfrey would activate one of the four sentinel artifacts. This was the Danu artifact, to be specific. Alongside guests that were in Alistair's mansion at the time, the activation of this sentinel artifact started a trial, something each artifact would require, and use Prima Materia to convert those unworthy into undead savages. Godfrey succumbing to the Order's influence allowed Alistair to be taken away from his home. His daughter Scarlet would kill Godfrey herself, and then would enlist the help of his three previous friends in order to track him down and find her father. After breathing vapors in a cave, they would be transported to a gladiatorial arena where they would learn much more about the Order and how they exert control over people. So how was it that the Order was able to exert control over regular people? The answer was simple, exposure from the Staff of Ra. The Order used it to enlist every member, and for those such as Godfrey and Bruno, they had no power over when it would activate nor how to fight it off when it did. It would come into effect once the crew had reached the ancient city of Delphi, having survived the Trials of Odin, the artifact on the Titanic, as well as Ra's artifact in a dream. This would provide them the necessary knowledge to enter the Lost City. Here, they would encounter the Zeus artifact and meet many figures from Greek mythology. Most specifically, Pegasus would be there to aid them, whereas Perseus, completely corrupted by Prima Materia for centuries, aimed at stopping them. Perseus would corrupt even Pegasus himself, and our team having to defeat both their corrupted ally and foe, Scarlet and the other three entrusted in the Oracle, who had been trapped, to lead them to her father, Alistair.
Thank you. But I fear it may be too late. If I die, they will return. But your father...
Please. No. Stay with me. She's dying. Go, get my father.
Alistair!
Even though you do not yet know what you are, Scarlet.
No, it can't be.
There is still so much that you can teach me. I will open the library. The world will be mine.
She would reveal herself to be the one and only Medusa. She was also the one in control of the Order, and corrupted Bruno and now Shaw. After being killed in secret by Bruno during the trip in Delphi, she put Scarlet to sleep and planned to travel to the Library of Alexandria for the next step in her plan. Diego was the only remaining person now, also learning that Alistair Rhodes had also been turned to stone. Diego, being the lone survivor, did not have many options he could take. He waited patiently for his next moves. Unfortunately, to the this day, we don't know about these characters' current whereabouts, nor is it likely we ever will see again. However, if these characters didn't manage to escape their universe and their reality, the Sentinel artifacts from their world sure would, and they would bleed into the new universe that appeared from the sacrifice made by Nikolai and Samantha and the others. Years later, during the aftermath of World War II, Germans use a bunker in Morosko, Poland, where underground, a lab is built to open a portal to other dimensions. Two scientists lead the helm of Project End Station, Oscar Strauss and Ulrich Vogel. During their investigations, they would disturb things that they could not understand. Specifically, they disturbed the dimension called the Dark Aether. With it now reopening, zombies distinct and more vicious than the ones that the Sentinel artifact trials created were able to flood through and overrun the facility. The entire area would be abandoned and shut down, and it would be closed for decades, hoping its secrets would never be uncovered. The consequences of reopening the Dark Aether would have adverse effects on that side of the dimension as well. It is said that the Dark Aether has a hierarchy within that plane of existence where gods fight for power over it. Formerly housing the vessels of the Shadow Man and Monty, it is currently unknown where, or if they exist, anywhere in this Aether dimension. Instead, beings such as Cordifex the Deathless and Syraxis the Shadow rule over. The ending of the Aether and the collapsing of that reality opened a door to a brand new one, but the implosion bled into the Dark Aether. This gave the gods the knowledge of other worlds beyond just their own, and from that moment forward, they would create artifacts of power to help them create a bridge into the real world. These would start soon after a portal was opened in Poland and Cordifex would appear before a Nazi leader, Wolfram von List, to become his host. Cordifex would bestow the power to raise the dead to von List, and he enslaved another demonologist named Gabriel Kraft to help him. Being told that his love was being held hostage, Kraft would work for but a small time for von List, but when it was revealed that his beloved Sasha had been dead for weeks already, Kraft would abandon von List and all of the projects they were working on and seek out other help from another band of soldiers. Kraft was able to contact other gods who opposed Cordifex and use their power to help kill him for good. As the old regime would die, a new power would soon arise within the Dark Aether and work on clawing its way out. It is now 1983 in East Berlin, Germany, and a young woman, seemingly in her early 30s, makes a call from a phone booth to a CIA officer, Gregory Weaver. He now had a desk job under the Requiem Division for Paranormal Research.
What have you done?
Did you get the package?
We've lost two teams since you went dark. Old war footage is the last thing on my mind right now.
Watch it. Watch the tape. Then tell me I'm wrong.
How did you get hold of this?
A friend in the KGB. A late friend.
Germans have Russian friends?
Yeah, some of us do.
What the hell is that?
That is why you needed to see the tape, Mashina. Stay with me, Weaver. The next part was shot 1 week later.
It's a cleanup crew. Poor bastard. bastards. They tried to bury
it. And it stayed buried until 2 weeks ago. Now, it's happening again. You heard of the Omega Blood.
You have to turn yourself in. The CIA can protect you. I can protect you.
I can't do that, Weaver. The Omega Group have plans for the outbreak zones. I have to stay in the field.
Sam, please!
I'm sorry. This is the only way.
Weaver, now with a real purpose in both retrieving Sam from the field and sealing off the breach, send in a strike team to Poland to uncover the facility before Omega Group can. He brings three allies on comms who each specialize in a field of work within Requiem. They would be Mackenzie Carver, Elizabeth Gray, and the now reformed Oscar Strauss. They would work with Weaver to guide the strike team through the facility, using only the data at their disposal at the site. However, it seemed very familiar here. Too familiar, even. Becoming abundantly clear when entering the above-ground bunker tagged with spray paint, the bunker is the same airfield where this began all those years ago, the first major outbreak in the Aether story. This site being synonymous with death and the opening to hell itself, twice now, spelled doom for what was to lie ahead. The strike team would have to enter the Dark Aether itself and get very familiar with displacing things in the Dark Aether so that they could use them in the real world. This allowed them access to figure out what was really going on at the Project End Station, and also helped them learn about memories of the past. These memories would be made manifest in Orlov, a former Russian soldier left for dead. He helps shut down the machine for good and sacrifices himself just in time for Requiem to escape, blowing up Project End Station permanently. During her time in this new world with no recollection of what happened before she entered the portal, Samantha would be able to make new friends here too, one being a defector from the Omega Group, Sergei Ravanov, who, while feeding Sam information under their noses, used it to capture her. Weaver, learning of her capture, sent the strike team to her last known coordinates, Omega Outpost 25 in Vietnam. It would be here that they would rendezvous with Ravanov, who was injured but safe in a room, and he would guide them on how to infiltrate the base. But he wasn't the only person held up in the outpost, as an Omega member, Dr. William Peck, introduced himself to the strike team. Not knowing that she was thrown into the Dark Aether and not knowing what could happen to her in there, the clock to get Samantha Maxis out of the Dark Aether was ticking, and it was ticking fast. The strike team would use clever methods to trick Dr. Peck into giving up crucial information about the whereabouts of Samantha and even the operations of the base itself. Using these in conjunction, they were able to fire up a satellite and get a teleporter working that would free Samantha Maxis from the Dark Aether. And even though the strike team was able to free her, something was wrong. She seemed distracted or a little bit amnesiated or not quite herself. Not to mention, time dilates in different dimensions, so a few seconds here could have been a few years in the Dark Aether. She would also emerge from the Dark Aether holding Takeo's katana, but this was not able to be investigated as an escape needed to be immediately executed. They would defeat the Orda standing in their way, and Samantha reacquaints with her friend Ravanov. He tells her that there is nothing so broken that it cannot be fixed, giving her hope about what the future may hold. But between her time in the Dark Aether potentially corrupting her and the growing threat of the Omega Group, it would become more imperative than ever to keep close tabs on their operations. On Omega's side of things, Peck was punished for his failure to stop Requiem by their director himself, Lev Kravchenko. He would remove Peck's eye for punishment.
Finally. Could you have taken any longer to get here?
You were smart to transmit your research. You demonstrated loyalty.
To an extent.
To an extent? What more do you want?
Just wait until we get back to Moscow. You'll see where the
Colonel thinks about this.
Really? Do you really want to know what I think? I think I want to see a demonstration of your commitment to Omega. Tell me, Doctor, which is your better eye?
There was a man living inside the Dark Aether for an insane amount of time. His name was Zykov, and he would provide information about the dimension with hopes of being one day freed by Requiem, promising them that they would, but Omega Group would also make the same deal with him. Neither side knew that he was playing both sides. In the midst of all this, Ravenov and the strike team would first need to nullify Peck's inversion warheads, designed to begin the Dark Aether Cold War. These inversion warheads would spread the newly found element Aetherium all over the world, but strike team, thanks to Ravenov, were able to completely nullify these rockets. But this victory would be somewhat short-lived, as the strike team and some of Requiem would fall for a trap by the Omega Group, leading to their capture by none other than Kravchenko himself. During this time as well, Maxis, under orders from the director of Requiem, underwent intensive training of her abilities that were gained within her time in the Dark Aether in preparation to rescue the strike team. Behind enemy lines isn't so exciting when you have no means of escape. With Requiem's pilot, Raptor 1, held captive as well by Omega, the strike team had to endure the mission given to them at the Berlin Wall. It was provided in vague terms that Omega, too, had a defector. Her name was Valentina, who had set off on her own to harness the Dark Aether's power. Now fully crystallized and completely corrupted, she would reactivate a Project End Station base in Berlin to open a portal for her master, the new god in the Dark Aether, the Forsaken. Valentina would reveal her true name, Angelica Hannibal Vogel, the daughter of Dr. Ulrich Vogel, which was hinted at earlier thanks to Vogel's password, AHV, in the Poland site. After the strike team finally defeats her, Kravchenko orders her capture and entrapment in the device so that they can close off the Forsaken from entering the world. Klaus, our robot ally here, offers to do so himself. Promised Raptor 1 return for their successful mission, Kravchenko attempts to blindside Requiem by killing them all with his helicopter, but before he can do that, Weaver and Samantha regain comms with the strike team, where she uses her newly developed power to open a portal for them to enter through that sends them back to base. In the final recorded moment within the facility, the director writes, "Samantha is a threat that must be dealt with." Not knowing about the director's ulterior motives, Requiem, now reformed, travel to a staging area facility to finally confront Omega once and for all. This facility, mostly used for training, had been now overrun with Aetherium. It was growing wildly out of control. The strike team open a blast door just in time to see that Omega Group bring Zykov back from the Dark Aether.
Tick-tock, Requiem. Once again, you're too late.
My friends, you did it. You brought me home. I have long awaited this day to cherish you.
I didn't realize he was the creature.
You
fucking fool.
The wolf was at our door and you let him in.
You have doomed us all.
All is not lost. Not yet.
Sam, what are you doing?
What I have to do, River. For the good of us. This is not your world to end!
After using the weapons and the tools at their disposal, they would weaken the Forsaken and create a wound in the center, and Samantha Maxis, using her powers, would fly directly into the Forsaken's open wound.
You will not consume this world! Not as long as I am here!
Sam, whatever you're thinking of doing, don't do it!
I'm not a bad person, Weaver. I am a good soul. I know what I have to do. I'm sorry. This is the only way.
He would be captured in a giant containment ball, nearly identical in design to Sophia from the world before. Believing it a job well done, Requiem bid a final farewell to Samantha, only to be met with their own capture. Every single member, aside from Ravanov, who never became a fully-fledged Requiem agent, would be captured and imprisoned on the director's orders. We would see that the director had been Edward, Eddie Richtofen. All along, and all grown up. Requiem was dead, and who knows whatever the hell Project Janus was planning to do. All we knew was that Dr. Peck had a little more to say, and he would go to find a small scouting fishing boat and ask to be taken to a very specific island.
Listen,
I need to rent a boat.
Where do you need to go?
Here.
Are you sure? There's nothing there. What is it you are looking for?
Some old friends.
So, quite a lot has taken place in the 6 years since the Forsaken was defeated. Project Janus is now fully operational, and a jailbreak was about to occur on a remote island in the Pacific. Having dreams of a happy life with his wife and son, Richtofen is awoken from the nightmare that he has probably relived for years at this point, their death by fire. Revealed in intel acquired 6 years ago, it was said that Samantha and Weaver were ordered a hit contract with the means of killing Edward Richtofen. Unbeknownst to them, they would accidentally kill his family on the poor intel of the CIA. Forever blaming them for that moment forward, he created the Requiem Division to secretly track and eventually capture them both in their own hells. Learning the truth of what had happened and learning his own identity within Black Site 13, Weaver would carve the name of his sworn enemy over and over in hopes of one day being able to kill him. Continually tortured by the sounds of Janus security, the ex-Requiem squad, including Gray, Carver, Strauss, Raptor 1, and Weaver, would be freed finally by an unknown ally. Introducing herself with another unlikely ally was Dr. Peck, who actually survived the events of the Forsaken and had gained intel about a year prior to the location of Black Site 13. Along the way to this moment, he met Maya Aguinaldo, an assassin who had gone to the island for the purpose of finding and freeing her brother, Nathan. At the same time, this terminus island in the Pacific where Weaver and the crew were, another event was occurring in a small town where Richtofen and Project Janus operated. incorporated, a town called Liberty Falls in West Virginia. There were dark ether outbreaks in both locations, and at the exact same time, it would be informed to the director that something went wrong with Sam, an artificial intelligence program with the memories of Samantha by Richtofen, using the Wunderwaffe DG2 originally designed by Ultimus Richtofen from the older dimension and remade due to the blueprints from the dark ether by Oscar Strauss. He would defend the mansion and save his security guard, Chief Blanchard, with orders to secure Liberty Falls and call in a rapid response team to contain the breach. On his way to access the SAM unit, he would be captured and consumed by its ethereal energy before disappearing, claiming that she'll never be free, and whether he was referring to Samantha herself or the SAM AI unit is not really clear, but the response was that she already was. Having not heard of the director's whereabouts after losing contact with him, Blanchard guides the Janus response team on orders to enter the church and clear out the outbreak. While interacting with a mysterious device, they find a lone scientist trapped in the dark ether named Dr. Panos. They would power up the machine only for Dr. Panos to use the stored energy to switch places with them, manifesting his echo into reality and trapping them in the dark ether. As of now, the whereabouts of Dr. Panos are unknown, but he's likely going after Richtofen, as are many others. As for Terminus, the few moments of reacquainting with Peck with the shared goal of killing Richtofen would be cut short, and on a whim, Weaver devises a plan to first find Maya's brother and then acquire Richtofen's coordinates. Investigating the lab, they find Nathan, who is a shell of his former self and a monster from the Amalgam program, not even in control of his own actions at all due to the test ran by him by the program. Specifically, Maya would be forced to stop and kill him to end his suffering.
It hurts. I've got this.
Wait! He's my little brother. My responsibility. The zombie.
Do it. Maya, I'm so sorry.
Beyond broken from what she just had to do, Maya would be absolutely shattered, and the culprit of these horrific tests and torture for both Nathan and ex-Requiem, Dr. Modi, would reveal herself to them. She had a plan to not only escape, but also enact one final self-destruction ploy in the central labs. Modi is thwarted, though, and met with the crew in the waters. Hoping to quickly escape with Peck's recovered inversion warheads, she is submerged and crushed by another test subject of hers, patient 13.
None of you can begin to appreciate the things I accomplished here. You aren't qualified, but...
No! My warhead! God damn it!
My God! Who said patient 13? Something's happening. Aesthetic energy spiking off the charts.
Having consumed the ethereum of the warhead, Patient 13 was fully powered and used everything it had to kill them all. But Requiem would be victorious in this matter over the beast, and they would rendezvous with Sam.
Casey, whatever your plan is for bringing back Maxis, it better be good.
It is. I have scraped all Project Janus files classified Director's Eyes only. Richtofen is obsessed with an ancient relic called the Sentinel Artifact. He believes it has the ability to manipulate a form of protomatter called Prima Materia.
You can't be serious. That term comes straight from medieval alchemy.
don't ask me to believe such horseshit. I am a man of science.
As is Director Rick Tolson, Dr. Strauss. The artifact is believed to be somewhere in the Principality of Avalon. He hired a criminal organization, the French Syndicate, to find it. They are interrogating a man called Gabriel Kraft. Your former associate, Sergei Ravanov, now employed by the Syndicate, abducted him on the orders of his boss, Franklin.
I'm in.
Enjoy your revenge, young lady. I'm not chasing after an old wives' tale.
Oscar, we've all seen things that seem impossible. And Richtofen is no fool. If he and Sam believe that this artifact can actually bring her back, we have to try. We can't give up on her. She never gave up on us.
She's right. Let's see for ourselves if this Sentinel thing is the real deal.
Agreed.
I still want to know where that bastard Richtofen is hiding.
Unknown. He may be en route to Avalon to collect the artifact.
Then let's find it before he does.
Heads up, people. Hilo's ready. The storm's getting worse. We gotta go, now!
Maya agrees to tag along with the hopes of enacting sweet revenge. She is here for reasons not aligned with the rest of Requiem. Finding where a drunken Ravanov has been hiding, broken and distant from all that occurred with Samantha years before, Ravanov was much less talkative this time around, and while trying to gather intel on Richtofen, they eventually find the demonologist Dr. Kraft, who provided them the magical means to find the weapons in order to acquire an amulet, the Obscurus Altilium. Maya succeeds in her more self-centered mission when she impersonates one of Franco's guards.
Okay. The door should keep her out. You know he wouldn't want this.
This isn't the night, then. This is for me.
Using the swords of the four bastard knights, sons of an entity called the Owl, they unlock his chamber and learn that, in order to become worthy of the amulet, they must first defeat the Guardian. After slaying the demon before they can rescue him, Kraft's cell is overrun and he is bitten in the neck by a zombie.
Kraft, we need to know. What do we do with the amulet?
Take it to the excavation site. But beware the Sentinel artifact. It could consume you.
And Richtofen, where is he? We know he contacted you.
Please. Please don't kill him. He is my son.
He's your what?
I don't think he knew he was raising a monster. Until it was too late.
And the dig site he mentioned. It is not far.
You may have noticed that he also begs Weaver to have mercy on Richtofen if he does end up finding him, as he is his son, adopting him in the wake of Sasha's death from an orphanage. The young Richtofen, also having fractured dreams from his time in the ether, would grow to become a dark individual. Shocked by the revelation that he was creating a monster, the team set out to the dig site to collect the Sentinel artifact before Richtofen could. With Richtofen again nowhere to be seen or heard from, the team travels down to the catacombs into the Dark Aether Nexus, where, using the Staff of Ice on instructions from the spirit of Sir Archibald, they would finish the job that Sir Archibald could not finish, for he would be killed by a mimic on the site, and this means that Requiem would have to finish the job for him. In order to do this, just like how the Sentinel artifacts behaved before, they would need to pass a trial, and this being specifically the Odin artifact from the Titanic many years ago, this would be a very difficult one indeed. However, escaping with Raptor 1 and Strauss on board, Sam notifies the team that the materials required to free Maxis can only be harvested in Liberty Falls at the mansion where she broke out to begin with.
There is more to be done now that you've secured the Sentinel artifact. Bring it directly to me. I have gathered every available file on the history and previous uses of this ancient device. It appears several times in the historical record. Some date back to ancient Egypt. I have deciphered steps to activate and control it. The artifact requires an infusion of exotic materials. Unique elements that can only be harvested here at Liberty Falls. I have already ensured everything we need is ready for your arrival. You will see your lost agent Maxis again soon. I'll be waiting.
Many years into the future, a Dr. Ava Jensen is a physicist specializing in Ethereum-based studies. She was conceived by Requiem using the DNA of Samantha Maxis and Sergei Ravanov, with Elizabeth Gray serving as the surrogate mother. Unaware of her true parentage, Ava was raised by adoptive parents and pursued a career in physics, and briefly working for Viktor Zakayev before eventually discovering his malicious intentions. However, Ava Jensen would have a secret. She would be contacted and spoken to by an entity in the Dark Aether, and she would even be contacted by a mysterious entity called the Shadowsmiths. Could these Shadowsmiths have anything to do with another manifestation of the Shadow Man from all those years ago in the Dark Aether? Who really knows? We aren't sure about that yet.
Are you there? Ava?
Is that you?
Ava? Ava!
In any case, it appears that the Forsaken may not have been truly defeated, for it could be the entity residing within the Sam AI, just desperate for a body, as we've seen with Dr. Panos. And this would make the director Richtofen especially dangerous, as manifesting any part of his memories, these remnants of the original Aether, has the potential to make dark things come to reality, and potentially enough to bring back old friends and comrades, enough to maybe one day restart the cycle once more. Thank you so much for watching this video. I wanted to do something very special for the zombies community. I've been thinking about this idea a lot, and this would not be possible without the help of a lot of very talented people that I highly suggest you go and check out. First, I want to thank Afterlife. He makes amazing reviews on zombies maps, and he helped me get a lot of this great-looking footage for Black Ops 4 and some BO3, and thank you to Stanley for helping him out as well. I also want to thank Shoddy Too Hotty for being an absolute zombie storyline genius and helping me put together the script and making sense of this whole twisted, convoluted storyline that Call of Duty Zombies is. I also want to thank both Motion Arc and Demo Crazy. You can find some amazing amazing Zombies music videos over on the Motion Arc channel. And I want to thank Demo Crazy for working with me to make some of these boss battles and these cinematics just absolutely epic. These are special, and we wanted to kind of highlight them and give them a bit of a moment. Also, I want to thank Hybes for the wicked thumbnail. That dude is insanely talented, so thank you very much for that. And I also want to give a shout out to Chrysalax. He makes these incredible, realistic Zombies props, these wonder weapons, perk cans, whatever it is. You can check out his stuff in the description and get whatever you want for your setup and your favorite piece of memorabilia in Zombies. He's got you covered. And most importantly, I want to thank you, the viewer. Without this and without you supporting my content and watching me, none of this would be possible. And if you want to maybe support the channel to allow more productions like this to be made, you can consider becoming a channel member. That allows me time to work on bigger stuff like this. But either way, I want to thank you for watching this. We wanted to make something a little bit more than just a cutscene compilation or something like that. And I also want to give a big thank you to Treyarch for making this world and making this game mode that we all love so much and are so passionate about. This wouldn't even exist without them. So thank you to all of you. And I think that's it for me. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you soon.